The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
Good morning, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Good morning if you're just switching on. How are you all keeping this Wednesday morning? And couldn't help but notice in the mornings it's darker, in the evenings it's darker. And would you believe, and some people love the winter, some people dislike it, that by the end of this month it will be dark, or sunset will be at 7, sunrise at 7 or after 7. So the very, very shortly, the next 2 weeks or so, our days are going to get considerably shorter. So enjoy it while it lasts. OK, some of your comments coming in over the course of this morning so far. Hi, the lady on your show now has a good idea, that's Sinead, about a place for dogs off leads. But she's typical of all the selfish dog owners who don't care about anyone else. Your dog won't bite you because you feed it. Another, always children first. So many scarred for life from bad experiences with dogs. Hi, Greg. I have a border collie, a very calm and friendly dog. In fact, more friendly than some humans I meet. I take him to the beach twice a week, in which we both enjoy a long walk with him off the lead. Lots of people and children ask if they can pet him. Okay. Greg, I think there is an entitlement among people who are scared of dogs. Why must we not bring our pets around for many who are like their babies on the off chance somebody will be afraid? Which is an interesting statement, and it's kind of putting it up to those who are saying, you know, keep your dog on the lead. They're saying, Greg, I think there's an entitlement among people who are scared of dogs. Why must we not bring our pets around for many who are like their babies on the off chance somebody will be afraid? Why don't people who walk dogs on beaches in Donegal pick up the dog poop in a bag and bin it at home? This is done in the UK because of fines and law enforcement, but a caller says seemingly not here. Another caller says, I was walking down Rathmullen Beach and I met a couple with a child and they had a dog running off the lead. The dog came running up to me, however. I had my dog on a lead. I own a large dog, but he's harmless. But the lady screamed at me for her dog approaching us, saying that a dog like mine could easily attack hers. That makes sense. I can't. So the person is walking on the beach with a bigger dog that's on a lead, and the other person's little dog runs up to the big dog, and the owner of the little dog gives out to the owner of the big dog on a lead. Unfortunately, my friend, I can't make sense of that. Greg, walking your dog on a lead should be made law and kept out of parks and the walks, ways like Swans Park, an inch walk. The foul poop everywhere, and they are a torture when you've wee Wayne's out walking and playing. But that means really, so if we're talking about beaches and parks and roads, does that mean really there is no, other than on your own private property, there is nowhere really that you can run a dog? And I think that was Sinead's point there, which is that also the route we want to go down? With all the problems in Donegal, Finn Park is the least of our worries. This proposal is a ridiculous waste of money. The Finn Park grounds are on a floodplain and the River Finn. Don't these parks, people watch the news, climate change will wash it all away. Well, it's not quite where the old one is. I take your point, but I also know there are competing priorities. But for some who are like really stressed about things in life, and lots of things are stressful, going along to watch football on a Friday night with the kids can be the thing that sort of gets them out of that space. And it's valuable in that regard as well. You know, it doesn't cost an awful lot. You can go get behind your team, you know, see your heroes up close and switch off from everything. You know, I think really the argument for a really good Donegal community stadium is sort of maybe to help people who are struggling with all the stuff that we know they're struggling with. Delighted to see that Ian, Finn Harps, are now moving forward with a plan to finally get the new stadium started. That comes in from Councillor Patrick McGowan. Thanks for that, Councillor. Right, someone messaged me and I want to give it a mention here. I'll see. It was came to me on Facebook. It's just a mum who I'm sure someone out there can help, and help her son. So bear with me whilst I open this, while it's still on my mind, because I do commit as much as I can when people reach out to me to try and get a resolution to it. Right, where is it? My messenger is very, very busy. Okay, here we go. Hi, Greg. I wonder, could you highlight this for me on your show? My son is looking for a plumbing apprenticeship. He's finding it very difficult to get an employer to take him on. He's rang around, but no luck so far. He's 18 years old. He's just got his Leaving Cert results. He doesn't want to go on to college. I know tradesmen are busy and maybe don't have the time to spend teaching these young people. Maybe someone listening to your show could help. We're in the Inishowen area, in and around Buncrana. So maybe out there is a plumber who wants to take on as an apprentice, a very keen 18-year-old who wants to get into a trade, and it's a really good idea to at this time, but just can't find a plumber to work with in and around the Buncrana area. So we've got a mum who's obviously very keen to see the best for her son. Maybe you are a plumber in and around the Buncrana area and you want to maybe have a meeting with this guy and see if he would suit your business. Get in touch with us, 07491 25000, and we can put you in touch with them. So it's a young lad just looking for a start. He wants to be a plumber, but is just needing that apprenticeship. He's in and around the Buncrana area. So it might just so happen that that clicks with someone today, and that's why I wanted to mention it. There was a woman standing in the ditch on the bend part of the road between Lifford and Letterkenny beyond the dual carriageway. She scared the life out of me. I jerked the wheel even though I wasn't actually near her. She just gave me such a fright. It could have so easily caused an accident if there was oncoming traffic. Okay, but she was off the road, wasn't she, standing in the ditch? But anyway, okay. We take all comments here. It's also important for the safety of the dog. It's so sad when an overexcited dog needs to be put down or given away. Indeed, and there's more talk of banning certain breeds of dogs as well, isn't there? Or is that in Britain? I can't remember which news channel I was watching at the time. A caller says, how come the HSE don't recognise these qualifications from the North, etc., when they do from India and all these other countries? Well, they all have to go through the KORU process as far as I understand. Maybe it's more streamlined when they're recruiting overseas. I don't know. Right, Donal Healy is Head of Aviation Business Marketing and Communications at Ireland West Airport. Are you there, Donal?
I am, Greg. How are you?
Good, I'm good. Good morning to you. Ireland West Airport, a.k.a. Knock Airport. Before we talk about the winter and beyond, how was summer 2023 at the airport?
Summer 2023, Greg, was actually a record-breaking summer at the airport. We carried close to 600,000 passengers by the time the summer period ends, which is about almost 10% higher than last year, or, you know, on average about 50,000 extra passengers. So we've enjoyed really a record-breaking summer, I suppose, highlighted by the fact that August was the busiest month in the airport's history, where we carried 102,000 passengers, and also enjoyed the actual single busiest day ever in the airport on the 29th of August, when we carried over 4,300 passengers in the day. So a very busy summer break, and great to see after, I suppose, a couple of years of significant disruption due to the COVID variant.
Yeah, you must be pleased, Donal, with how quickly it has bounced back.
Yeah, absolutely, Greg, I suppose. You know, I remember sitting in my office here in April 2020, looking out in the car park with about five cars in it. And that's no exaggeration. I'm wondering, will it ever return, you know, to what it was? And, you know, all the experts had forecast that would be 2025 at the earliest before aviation returned to pre-COVID levels. So, you know, to be reaching the numbers we're reaching this year, which will culminate at the end of the year in us having a record year of in the region of 830,000 passengers. You know, it's been surprising. It's been very welcome, and I suppose confounding all critics.
And what is that down to? I mean, obviously there's a huge appetite for people to travel, but they're not going to travel for the sake of it. You have to have the right routes opened. You have to have the right times, the right availability. So what has been the key to the success this year so far?
Well, last summer was extremely busy, Greg, and it rebounded awful strongly once the restrictions were lifted. And the kind of feeling was then that people were, you know, eager to get away because they'd been effectively locked up for 2 years. So we weren't sure was that, you know, a one-off and that people were traveling maybe a couple of times last summer, but this summer, it appears again that people have decided they're having their holiday. They're not going to give up the holiday, despite, I suppose, pressures on cost of living and pressures with fuel and different things in the economy. They've decided they're still going. For example, we've had record numbers on a number of our routes this year, such as the likes of Alicante, Malaga, Cologne in Germany, which you've been to, of course, Milan.
Well, so whilst remember, that's a long time since you took me to Cologne, Donal. You're going to have to up your game here, sunshine.
So it's a culmination, Greg, of people seem to have made the conscious decision that they're having their holiday regardless of what's happening in the economy. But also, as you said, I suppose we've added a lot of new routes this year. We've added routes to the likes of Lanzarote and Tenerife, which people have been really, really looking forward to having them back. We've introduced, of course, a new Heathrow service in March. So we've added a lot of new routes, and that combined with people, as I said, making the conscious decision that they're not going to give up the family holiday or the short break with their friends, has led to, you know, record numbers.
Yeah, for sure. And I am sure the majority of traffic is outbound, but it is also, with these routes, a gateway into the west, more affordable, arguably more beautiful part of the country in terms of sort of inbound traffic.
Yeah, and that's where, I suppose, the likes of the Cologne route, our route from Milan, our route from Girona in Barcelona, you know, them routes would typically be about 60% inbound, 40% outbound, Greg, in terms of the passenger profile, particularly Cologne. Cologne has actually had a record summer. And I was actually talking to someone anecdotally there on Thursday who said they came back in from Cologne on Thursday and they said about 80% of the flight was full of Germans, and that's in the middle of September. So that's been very encouraging to see, and that obviously has a spin-off for tourism in the region. But I guess also the likes of the introduction of the new Heathrow service, it started in March. You can now connect to 80 destinations both ways. So if you think about it, on the first flight that came in here on the 29th of March, we had four people travelling from Sydney who connected through Heathrow to Knock. We had people going out to New York, coming in from New York. So the connectivity that that has brought really has been a game changer for the region, in the sense that you can travel now from anywhere in the world via Heathrow, a couple of hours layover, and straight into the west and northwest of Ireland.
At this time, do you actively market Knock to New York or Knock to Sydney? Do you know what I mean? Like, is it are people making their own connections, or is there an opportunity to say effectively, you know, you load your luggage on at Ireland West and then next up New York, albeit with a change down the line? Is that, maybe that's already in place, Donald?
It actually is, Greg. And if you open the Donegal Democrat this week, you'll see a double pay spread there promoting that very fact that you can connect.
I'm good, eh?
you can connect to 80 destinations across the world. And you made a very good point there. That's the education piece. And if you take a bit of time, is that you can actually today go onto aerlingus.com or ba.com and book Knock to New York for any dates in the next 12 months. Check your bag in here at the airport and collect it in New York or Boston or Sydney. So it is a seamless check-in experience. You're not having to get off in Heathrow, go back, check in, go through security, come back out, check in again. You'll get your bag when you land in your end destination. So that is a big selling point, particularly for business people as well, connecting, who may have had to travel to Dublin. Yet, you know,
I mean, there was a point I could almost have got my post delivered to Ireland West Airport. I was through it quite a bit when things were different. But it was normally like sort of from September on, because it suited better. And plus, I love being here in the summer. There's a different clientele, but still plenty of options, are there, for right through the winter out of the airport?
There is, yeah. And it's a funny one, Greg. Was June, July and August are always the peak months in terms of the number of passengers that go through. September and October are actually very strong months at the airport, and it's a different mix of passengers. Obviously, a lot of families will go through in July and August. But in September, you see a lot of couples, a lot of groups, hens and stags, football traffic comes back very strongly. So it is a very, very busy month, the months of September and October. But then as you look to the winter, it does get quieter. There's no question about that. Obviously, the frequencies aren't as high as they will be during the summer. But this winter, we're delighted to see the return of Lanzarote and Tenerife. So there'll be some much needed sun for all those miserable evenings in the western northwest of Ireland. As much as we love it, we have to admit the winter can be quite gloomy here. So we have weekly flights to Lanzarote, Tenerife and Malaga this year at Ryanair. So we're hoping that they will prove undoubtedly popular with people in this region.
You know, and finally, success breeds success. You know, particularly the likes of your Ryanairs and others as well. They will look at footfall, they'll look at numbers, they'll look at potential. We've broke a record this year. Why can't another record be broken yet next year or the year beyond that? It leaves the airport presumably in a very strong position in terms of, you know, maybe even attracting more stuff for next year and beyond.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've hit the nail on the head. Success breeds success. When other airlines see good traffic numbers like we're reporting, we're going to have a record this year, they're seeing very strong load factors, aka the number of people on the plane. This obviously strengthens the business case when we go and meet other airlines. And that's always the challenge, Greg, is trying to get in additional new airlines. We've had the likes of Lufthansa before, we've had direct flights to the States before, and as we bounce back stronger now and airlines are trying slowly getting back to their pre-pandemic balance sheet levels, if you'd like, it does open up new doors. And we would hope, yes, this year has been a record year, but we certainly see the magic number there of 1 million passengers annually. That is really the, you know, that's the aspiration, that hopefully in the next 2 to 3 years we can reach that target. And to do that, we need more routes, we need more growth. And hopefully we've grown 15% this year. Next year, again, we can add some further growth.
Yeah, OK, fair play, Donegal. It is a local airport to Donegal, certainly from the south of the county, comfortably achievable in an hour and a half, which is grand on the way up, but particularly pleasant on the way back as well. You're back in your own house in not too distant a future, so add an hour onto most other parts of Donegal, and it's very, very accessible for people. So, Donal, listen, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Greg, and thanks to all your listeners. As you said there, we've had upwards of 35,000 passengers from Donegal using the airport this year, so that's hugely appreciated by us all down here.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. Donal Healy, Head of Aviation, Business, Marketing and Communications with Ireland West Airport, a.k.a., of course, Knock Airport. Right, okay. We have a response from the Sialta Group on our conversation with Grania yesterday. I just want to have a quick read through that. Greg, speaking of hospitals, last Sunday I had such a scare and had to go to Sligo University Hospital. I couldn't get to the hospital myself, so I had to avail of a taxi. The lady who drove us was named Grace, and she was so unbelievably kind. We hadn't a clue where to go, but she parked up and got us all checked in and ensured I was safe. Grace, if you're listening, I'm so grateful for your kindness. Thank you. Right, okay, so that's a taxi driver called Grace, and went above and beyond, took this person to Sligo University Hospital and actually brought them in through the front doors and got them settled. Okay, that's fair play. Grace, I hope you are listening, or someone who knows Grace can pass those kind words on to her. All right, good morning to Kathy Slevin, John, Lisa, Maeve, Devlin, Todd, also Rosemary, Siobhan, JJ, Hugh, Dolores, Annie, Charlie, Audrey, all watching the show. You can watch the show every day here at the 9 till noon show on our YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, on your smart TV or your Fire Stick and across your mobile devices. And we're also on Facebook, Highland Hub, Highland Radio News and Sport. And joining us now is Kate Flynn. And maybe if you're watching, you'll see an image of Kate Flynn's property and you might be able to help to get it back to her. Hi, Kate. How are you keeping?
Yeah, not so bad.
Rightio. So we were yesterday on Community Guard information. An appeal was put out there for a caravan which was stolen from Boncrana. So tell us when and how, as much as you know, how it was taken, Kate.
Yeah, it's left at the back of our house, and it was stolen on Thursday the 7th at about 3 a.m. We had like a hitch lock on it, but they've obviously just, I don't know, they've got that off somehow. We know it was seen in Fawn at 3:13 a.m. and then it turned left at the foot in just after that, and was seen then in Burnfoot as well. But that's as far as we've got so far.
And am I correct in saying that we now know or suspect it was being towed by a blue van?
We think it was blue. We've had witnesses think it was blue. So we're just kind of going through, and the guards are going through the CCTV. Mm-hmm. Because it was night, it's hard to tell.
Okay, so don't disregard, don't put all your eggs in that basket, listeners, but don't disregard it either. It may well have been towed by a van.
Definitely a van.
Okay.
Yeah, it was definitely a van.
A larger van, Kate, is it?
Yeah, medium-sized van. Okay. Kind of like a Renault kind of panel van.
Now, it's a beautiful,
not small van.
For those who are watching, they'll see the image of it. It's a beautiful, clean caravan. It is distinctive in that it has a sort of a blue wave going across the side of it and some markings towards the front. So as I say, and it's got an aerial poking out the side of it, which you don't see all of the time. So it is quite distinctive. Where do you think it's been taken?
I don't know. It's definitely gone over the border anyway, right. So I'm not sure. I'm just hoping it's not gone over to England or Scotland yet. But we've told all the ports, and we've tried to get the word out as much as possible, hoping that someone will see, or even whoever took it will just leave it then, think it's not worth it. Like, we love that van so much. All the kids are devastated. All the kids' stuff was still in it because we'd been away to Electric Picnic and we hadn't emptied it. So our coats and clothes and toys and... Yeah. We're just devastated.
And it's full of memories as much as anything else, isn't it, Kate?
Full of memories, of sentimental things. Our wee tooth fairy pillow, our little girl lost a tooth in Electric Picnic, so we dropped the pillow. And that, all my kids have had that pillow. It was mine when I was a little girl. And just little daft things like that that mean the world to us. But obviously, whoever stole it don't care about things like that.
Yeah, and was it obvious where it was parked? And you did all you could in terms of having a lock on it. But do you feel that someone knew it was there? Or
they've obviously seen it. Apparently, there was other things stolen that night. There was a horse box, and a few people have come forward saying there's been other things. So I don't know whether there was a sort of gang of people going around doing the rounds in Buncrana. But, I mean, we're kind of at the back. You know, we're not... There's not loads of cars that go past our place, but obviously they've spotted it. Apparently, our neighbours think they saw a black car earlier on the Thursday, seeing the caravan stopped and pulled up beside it. So maybe that was them checking if there was wheel locks and stuff, and then they've come back later on with the van.
And, you know, with drones nowadays and they've got, you know, long range and great cameras on them, I wouldn't be surprised if quite a bit of scouting goes on with the likes of them. As well as the sentimental value, there is, and I'm not asking you to put a figure on it, but this is obviously, it's a very clean yoke. I presume all the extras were on it with it as well, Kate, were they?
Yeah, I mean, we got a credit union loan, but we only got it last year. Wow. So we've still got 4 years to pay on the loan, so it's not even paid off yet. We've been camping for years in tents, so all our camping gear, like the camping tables, camping chairs, cookers, all that's in there as well. And that's, you know, things that we've been buying over the years and collecting when we was in the tent. So, yeah, there's a lot of... And plus the kids' computers, the switches was in it. And,
oh, no, right. It was a lot gone.
Just devastated, yeah.
Right, if anyone has any further information on where it is, or maybe you have CCTV footage that might identify a number plate on the vehicle seen towing it, anything like that. As I say, we have the image up here now, but I know the majority of people are listening. The image is on the Garda Síochána Facebook page as well. It's quite a distinctive, but not unique, but it's quite a distinctive caravan. And you can hear from Kate, there's a lot of sentimental and actual value in it as well, with all the extras that would have been loaded up into it as well. So, Kate, listen, we hope that people spot this Adria Adora 532 and contact the Gardaí with any information that they may have, especially if you saw a van, medium size, possibly blue in colour, towing it away 3:30 a.m. That's the early hours of Friday morning. Is that right, Kate?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thursday night, Friday morning, yeah.
All right, and listen, the suspicion is perhaps it could be boarding a boat to go somewhere else, or it could be just up the road. Don't rule anything in and out, listeners, and you could help Kate in getting this back. All right, then I do hope you get sorted.
Thank you so much. Thanks for putting it out there as well. We appreciate it.
That's all right. It's our pleasure, Kate. Thanks very much, Kate Flynn there. 086 60 25,000, WhatsApp and text if you want to pass stuff on as well. Right, we are joined on the programme now by Mairead. Mairead, good morning to you.
Hi, Greg, how are you?
I'm okay. What's your recent experience, Mairead?
Greg, I just sent a text in because I was listening to the conversation around the dogs and people's fear of dogs and then some other people's opinions around that. And I suppose it was the text that came in from the person who, I can't remember exactly what it was.
It's about the entitlement, wasn't it?
Yeah, that there was entitlement, yeah. And that people feel that it's fine, you know, to bring their babies everywhere, but yet then they have this opinion about dogs. And I think, I suppose, first of all, I'd say everybody is very entitled to their opinion, and I'm a firm believer in that. But I think people who, you know, in relation to dogs, people really need to look at this from the child's point of view, not from the adult's point of view who's with the child when a bit of kerfuffle gets up in a park or on a footpath or whatever because a dog is passing. And I suppose from my point of view, I would be very conscious that if we went to a restaurant or, you know, went out anywhere in public, if my child was crying or acting up or whatever, I would remove that child, both for their sake, but also for the other customers in the restaurant. And I wouldn't let my child go over and crawl around somebody else's feet or crawl all over them or whatever.
I wouldn't mind that, to be honest with you, Mairead, because, you know, I think, I suppose maybe it's as a parent myself. I mean, obviously, you're not going to allow them to run riot as such, but I don't mind the noise of a baby crying or a toddler acting up a little bit or something like that there. It's never, ever bothered me. But I do understand that you want to respect all others that are in that restaurant. But I don't
Yeah.
Most people don't.
And I think, like, I actually don't mind it either, but I'm conscious that other people would, or I'm very conscious as well, like ourselves, you know, people who maybe don't have a huge amount of money and go out for a night and they go out for a break, they don't really want to hear my child crying then in the restaurant. I suppose that's what I'm saying. But I suppose our situation is during COVID, and I was just saying to Donna Marie there, I hope I don't end up now in bits talking about this.
It's all right.
It was a very stressful few years, you know. But I, during COVID, my younger daughter developed a serious fear of dogs, so much so that she came to the point where she couldn't actually leave the house. And I suppose during COVID, you know, lots and lots of people got dogs during lockdown. And it was, you know, a new novelty in the house and something for them to do, to go out and walk their new dog. But a lot of those people didn't actually know how to manage a dog in public.
And was there a particular experience that triggered this in your daughter?
No.
Or did it just so happen that she didn't like this? Because she probably looked huge
to
her.
No, it just developed during COVID, yeah. And I'd say it was lockdown with small children as well. COVID was out there. You weren't really allowed to go out to it. And maybe the only thing she could equate that to with a dog, I don't know. Nobody knows, actually. But we got to the point where we couldn't leave the house. We couldn't even get from the house to the car for the fear that a dog might approach while we were doing that. Couldn't get her down to school. There was one day, which is actually probably one of the most upsetting days, where we actually lost our childminder, because our childminder told us that that my child was so distressing that her own children were distraught by the time she got them to school. And I actually agree with her. You know, I have no problem with her telling me that. And she actually did me a favour, because then I thought, actually, we need serious help here as opposed to trying to do this ourselves.
So,
you know,
she would have a panic attack even at the thought of leaving the house for fear of encountering a dog. So the house became the absolute safe space.
Absolute safe space. And so did school, because the school were fabulous, but also dogs are not allowed through the school gates. But I just think, you know, that when people, you often hear this discussed on the radio, and you often hear it discussed in groups of people where, you know, people say, well, you know, you're allowed to bring your baby and I'm not allowed to bring my dog. But I think people there are, that's their opinion on how they feel about it. They're not thinking about how the child feels about it.
And one
thing
too,
it doesn't matter if I feel it's my daughter.
Yeah, and one thing too, Marie, that some dog owners don't seem to get, and it's not a pile-on on dog owners because we all have to share this space, is they attribute the size or the cuteness or the friendliness that they seem to know of that dog as to why other people shouldn't be afraid of it. It doesn't take into consideration or understand an irrational fear or a real fear that someone else might have. It doesn't matter how wee and fluffy and cute it is. People with a fear of dogs, and especially an acute fear like your daughter developed, it doesn't matter how cute they are. If they're uncontrolled or nearby, or even, I think in your daughter's case, if she saw one, it's incredibly triggering, and it triggers a very, very real response. It's not just someone being fussy. There's a flight or fear trigger in there as well. Like it's an actual reaction.
It absolutely is. Like, we have people saying to us all the time, oh, she's harmless, she won't touch you, she's a lovely dog, she's just a small thing, her bark's worse than her bite, she only wants to play with you. And like, I've actually seen people, now luckily not with my child, but I've seen in our local park dogs actually jumping up on children being hysterical, and the owners with them saying, but sure, she's only lovely, she only wants to play. And you can see that the child is about to collapse, you know.
There was one time, I think with Hudson, what might have triggered it, because I was thinking about it, and as I say, it's nothing like what you've experienced, and it's something that we're working through at the moment. But I remember we were sitting outside a place when he was in the pram during lockdown, you know, it was all outside. And there was a group of people, who lovely family, don't get me wrong, but they had a big black dog with a bit of grey or brown on it. And it was on one of those extendable leads, and they would let the dog run at people, and then it would get a jerk back, and they thought it was hilarious, and he was cute, and he won't harm you. And I just wonder, are things like that where these little concerns can come from? Now, this is not like, I mean, obviously, after that experience with the childminder, and I think you're very gracious in understanding that, you thought, right, this is not something that can be allowed to continue. So it's not resolved yet, but you as a family have had to go to great lengths to try and help your daughter in this regard. So can you talk a little bit about that, Mairead?
Sure, yeah. So I suppose that, remembering now that this is all during lockdown, you're kind of limited in what you could do as well, you know. But I think it's important for people to know, who might be in this situation, that the the SPCA run courses for children who are anxious around dogs and for their families. So we did the online one during COVID, and we're going to go back now because obviously, you know, time has moved on and thankfully we've progressed with this as well. So we're going to go and do the in-person one now as well. And that's a really good resource, and it's free. You just, if you wish to, you just give a little donation then to the SPCA. We also referred ourselves into the psychology services, and whilst the waiting list is very long, and I'm very conscious of all the conversations I've had over the last few days as well about services, the psychology service while you're on the waitlist had an advice clinic, and that was just a saviour because, you know, we can do so much, but then someone else coming in with fresh eyes might give you a few other ideas. So they never actually saw my daughter, but the support was still there by helping us to kind of move forward a little bit with what we were doing and then going on to the next plan. And I think it's, you know, as I said, my real reason for calling is to ask people to think about it, that it's the child, it's not anybody else around, it's not how the parent reacts, because, you know, like I would try not to give out. I met somebody in a park, say, who had a dog that really was, when I say out of control, they wouldn't be out of control if you met them, but they're too much out of control for my daughter to be there. So I would go up and say, you know, your dog, because I'm not afraid of dogs, I'd say your dog's absolutely gorgeous, but we're trying to work through something with her daughter at the minute, so could you just, you know, keep it back a little bit? And most people are very good. But as I say, one thing that I think people really need to be aware of is, unfortunately, has moved from having a fear of dogs, which she still has, albeit it's not the severity that it was, but she has now moved on to have generalized anxiety. So she'll focus on something else. And the psychologist told us that where a child has a very, very severe fear of something, that is quite common then to happen afterwards, that they'll then focus their kind of obsession, isn't the right word, but they'll focus on something
it's
else.
It's not far off it. I know exactly what she's going through. I do understand that. It's not an obsession, but it's that you have to, something has to take up that energy. So if it's switched from dogs, it doesn't go away. It has to go to something else. But hopefully you will be able to work through that, Mairead, and things are progressing in the right direction. But then, of course, with everything you've been through, I suppose then when you hear these conversations, I was going to say shake people, but clearly you don't, but sort of say, please just try and understand a little bit more deeper than just being a very loving dog owner. You have to think of the consequences for other people and the impact it has on a whole family. It's not just your daughter, because it's very clear that it permeates throughout the entire family as well. And in terms of what you can do and how you can plan things and stuff.
Absolutely, yeah. Like, we would have to have a pre-plan no matter what we go to do now. We have to think it out, plan it, and she needs to know there's a plan. And the school are very good at that as well. Like, if they're going out for a little walk or, you know, they're going somewhere, they have a plan. She knows what the plan is. She knows who she's going to stand beside. She knows who she goes to if she's not feeling right.
It will improve for Mairead.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right. Stay strong. Thanks so much, Mairead. I appreciate it. And fair play. You know, it's not easy for you to talk about. Take care. That is Mairead there. Any views? Okay. Leah McGarren's journalist with Silicon Republic. And Lee McGarren, I beg your pardon, and joins us on the program now. Lee, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm delighted because iPhone have come over to the dark side. The iPhone 15 has been launched, and after years and years and years of pressure, they are now going to be shipping them with a USB-C charging port. This is it's a small deal, but it's a big deal as well from a technical point of view.
I'd say so. It's a big change for Apple. Apple will be one of the few sort of big tech companies, particularly in the smartphone sector, that has not been using or shifting to USB-C. They've stuck with their own Lightning connector. So there's loads of different types of chargers out there, but Lightning is specific, to my knowledge, to Apple devices. The EU has been pushing against that for years, and they recently, I believe last October, the European Parliament voted that all mobile phones, tablets, cameras, whatever sold in the EU have to have a USB-C charging port by the end of next year. So Apple has bit the bullet on this one, which is good news for most people, bad news if you're sticking with older iPhone models, obviously, that'll be one problem.
How excited are people about this new iPhone? Because we are at a point, as and I love my technology, but like, say, for instance, with smartwatches, you know, you can get them with ECGs and stuff. And there's not an awful lot further, I think, they can go with, maybe with design or whatever, but from a tech point of view, maybe I'm being naive in that. But anyway, but even with phones, you know, you get a good phone, you get last year's good phone. This year, it seems the only thing they can really tinker with is the camera.
I would sort of agree with that. They can always make Apple tends to make incremental upgrades. Each model is a little bit sleeker, a little bit neater, slight increase in, you know, improvements from each one, and maybe the occasional single big feature. To my knowledge, the biggest ones for these latest models would be that the cameras do seem very, very strong. 48 megapixels front camera, multiple zoom lenses, so very, very advanced, it seems. The stronger models, the Pro and Pro Max, also have like triple zoom and up to 1 terabyte in storage space. So that's pretty significant, I would say. But I would agree, I don't think they're too... They never really break the mold with these models, but to be honest, Apple doesn't need to. I mean, they're at the very top in terms of market capitalization worldwide, and they're also at the top of these, the premium smartphone market. I believe last year, Apple phones represented 75% of all premium smartphones, that's smartphones over, let's say, $600, sold in 2022. And they also have a very strong market share in the refurbished market. So I'm sure many of your listeners might, they don't buy the latest model, but maybe 1 or 2 years down the line, they'll buy a refurbished iPhone 15 for far cheaper. And it's still a significantly powerful product. So Apple's in a very strong position. They don't really need to do anything too groundbreaking. So I'd say some people are definitely excited, and they will, from what I've seen before, they're going to get their sales in. Absolutely.
Yeah, and are they under any pressure? Because there are, you know, some strong contenders out there. It is a very loyal base, but it's like any business, really. You can't take that for granted either. So, you know, they are dominant. But as I say, you know, you've got the flip phone now. I think Samsung have done a fantastic job, actually, in marketing that. They've really gone to town in it. I've never held one, so I don't really know about that. I suppose that's a huge innovation. But are iPhone in such a comfortable position that they can just really tinker with the camera?
I would say they are in a very good position. Now, obviously, they still have to keep innovating, keep upgrading. You know, tech is never silent, so they can never rest too easy on the throne. I would agree that Samsung's flip phones are a very interesting one. It's one they've been sort of honing in on over the last couple of years. That would be a potential challenge, and obviously Samsung is still a big player. Samsung, in my opinion, though, has suffered in the last year. We've seen the chip shortage and certain chip issues have affected lots of companies. Samsung in particular, I believe in some of their latest quarterly reports, their profits have fallen significantly. Like, you know, gross profit, like their income went down by more than 90% compared to last year. So they're in a sort of licking their wounds phase right now, whereas I think currently Apple is in a good position to remain dominant. I mean, look, I think there's lots of alternative phones out there, and I'm personally not one to buy the absolute latest model for the latest price because I feel it will be half the price within 1 year. But from a global standpoint, I think Apple is currently in a good position. And iPhone has remained a very dominant phone.
But that's because they have a frustratingly loyal fan base. Like, I am currently a Poco 5G. I think it was €280. I have to do video editing. Camera's not fantastic, but anything that I need to do on it, I can do. It's edge to edge. The camera's built into the screen. It's got fingerprint. Obviously, you know, NFC. It's got hypercharging. And all for under £300. Bang that on a $14.99 contract. Do you know what I mean? But I used to be that guy that I had to get the very latest, because I was an Android person, still am, of course, the very latest Samsung. Apple, though, have a really loyal, and I don't get it. I mean, having your entire app drawer on the screen, I don't understand that. What's wrong with people?
I would say they definitely do have a very loyal brand. I mean, we have to remember the history of the iPhone. Like, when it first came out years ago now, it was very much a groundbreaking design. It looked so revolutionary. It was, you know, the first non-brick Nokia-style phone, I would say, of its time. So it's kind of held up that sort of top brand mentality. And there are definitely people out there who just believe, like, you know, having the latest iPhone is the biggest sign of prestige. It's not something I would personally agree with, but they are still powerful phones. I think there are very good alternatives out there, personally, but but they are still good ones. I can respect the market loyalty they have developed over the years, you know.
Yeah.
Though I would have issues with the fact that each model is only being slightly upgraded. I think I'm hoping for a contender to really shake things up, like I believe the Nutting phone is a small startup that's very much trying to shake up the market. It looks very unique. I'm not saying I'm exactly the big fan of that specifically, but it's nice to see new products come in, because I think the more groups come in to shake up an industry, the more innovative products you're going to have, rather than just constantly having,
it's just the iPhone so restrictive. If you want to download, you know, sideload an app onto the iPhone, I mean, maybe you can, but for the most part, you can't. I just don't understand. Do they still not have a headphone socket? They got rid of that. They never came back.
That's one thing I am personally very unhappy with. Push to the wireless. That's it. It's all designed to, in my view, it's, you know, Apple also makes its money from selling their accessory products. In my opinion, accessory products that have a very short shelf life and have to be constantly replaced. And I don't think it's very coincidental that Apple was the first $1 trillion company in the world, to my knowledge. So they've definitely made money on this. I have issues with, new products making older accessories completely obsolete. And we saw that with the move to wireless headphones. The next phone that brings back a jack for wired earphones will have my money.
Listen, Lee, thanks as always. Lovely to chat to you. Fair play to you. Lee McGowron there, journalist with Silicon Republic.